So for introverts, I would start with that sort of baseline. Examine your story, your state, and see if there's a better, you know, more useful way to go into this for you and the people in this situation. Like, how can I help people out? I mean, I think that's a good one for introverts. It is for me. Instead of like, what am I going to say that's going to be fascinating? Like, how can I make it easier for the people at this party? They don't know anybody here either. So maybe I can be of service, like by coming prepared or making offers or paying attention. That sort of turns the tables for me. Then it's not about me being witty or charming or smart. It's like, I'm going to try to make this easier for them.
This is Meredith For Real, the Curious Introvert, and I'm Meredith. I explore the questions people think but don't ask out loud, either because they're taboo or thanks to cultural hypnosis. My mission, and yours if you choose to accept it, is to inspire curiosity by exploring the nuance and paradox of our world. Each episode is different, so bring your ADD and your earbuds and have a look around. Hey, Curiositors, it's me, Meredith. Last month, I went to a podcasting conference where there were a lot of networking opportunities. Over the 4 days I was there, I messed up my own name when introducing myself to someone, asked a British guy if he had flown in all the way from Australia, and made so many contorted facial expressions while teaching my class that it was almost impossible for the photographer to get a nice photo of me. The good news here is I never claimed to be cool. The bad news is a lot of us struggle in social situations and small talk is the worst. But more good news, my guest is one of us. He's a curious introvert with practical tips. In fact, I do something in this episode I've never done before. I crafted three specific scenarios for my guest to socially engineer: a family reunion, politics at a party, and in an elevator with your boss's boss. He not only brings pro-level expertise to these, but gives you tools to reach outside that general conversation template we all use to wake up conversations you've been sleepwalking through. Can you tell I'm pretty stoked about this one? And I'm stoked about you too. If you're a loyal curiositor coming back for yet another week of disrupting the algorithm with me, thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And if you're new here, welcome. Every Monday is a new 30-minute conversation with a paradoxical person or topic. There's no specific order to listen to episodes, and at the end of each episode, I offer a next episode suggestion of, if you liked that, you might like this sort of thing. So have a look around and hit play on whatever grabs your attention. All right, enjoy the show. Have you ever had a really good conversation with someone? You know, you left feeling energized, connected, and heard, and you even learned something. You couldn't wait to meet again. And then in another conversation, sometimes even with that same person, it just felt like work. If you've been wondering how to recapture the secret sauce for skipping the small talk, this episode is for you. My next guest is a card-carrying introvert who started an improv group in college to fine-tune his communication and quick thinking. After getting his bachelor's in modern thought and literature from Stanford, he became senior director at Stand and Deliver, a leadership communication consulting firm. And he's also the co-author of What to Talk About on a plane, at a cocktail party, in a tiny elevator with your boss's boss. Today, he'll be weighing in on three very specific scenarios and share how to turn small talk into real talk so introverts and extroverts alike can break through the chit-chat and have more amazing conversations. Comedian, writer, professionally curious, Rob Bedecker. Thanks for coming to the show.
Thanks, Meredith. I'm so happy to be here.
Me too. I love the contrast that you're like an introverted performer, especially an improv performer, because, you know, for most of us, that's like more horrifying than small talk.
Yeah, it's funny. I think it's not uncommon for performers to be introverts. I hear of, you know, famous celebrities in Hollywood who are secretly introverted.
Yeah, and I'm definitely a part of that club, if it's a club. I don't think introverts really have clubs. We kind of gather separately in our own homes.
Right.
But I'm definitely a part of that. Yeah. How has improv improved your conversation skills? Has it had an impact on it at all?
Yeah, I was terrified of performing. I think I still have a natural anxiety about getting in front of groups, although I've kind of made it my work, ironically. But what improv did for me, or at least the kind of improv I learned in college, was take away the pressure of being funny and being kind of in the spotlight. Patricia Ryan, who was my improv teacher, came at it from a really introvert friendly way for me, because the concepts were all about making your partner look good on stage, being curious, paying attention, and telling a story. So what I had thought was like, get up on stage and tell jokes just wasn't at all required, really. And you could be really good just by kind of being present and curious. So it was a huge, huge eye opener for me.
Well, shout out to Miss Ryan, because that is part of the reason why I find podcasting so natural, is because it's not about me. My solo episodes are hands down the most horrifying, but those that are with other people, it's easy because it's not, the spotlight isn't really on me. It's on, you know, who this person is and getting to know them, but I've never connected that with conversation. So that's a really cool, really cool insight.
Yeah. I mean, there are other, I could go on forever about this, the sort of principles that are where I eye opening, but another one is, and people have probably heard this, it's become pretty popular now, that the kind of yes and attitude, saying yes to what improvisers call offers. And all an offer means is something another person does or says, or an object in the room, or something you notice. And so it's really about paying attention and saying yes, versus our kind of natural instinct to say yes, but, or block offers, as improvisers would say. So it's sort of a mindset shift that, again, as you said, takes the focus off of you and puts it on the world out there, other people, which is a huge, huge relief for, as you said, a card-carrying introvert.
Because I think some of the nervous energy comes when you, for some people at least, when you first meet someone and you're in a situation where you're expected to converse, and it's like, okay, maybe if you are an introvert, you probably hate small talk. Is there a minimum amount of small talk that's necessary? Is it socially acceptable just to like jump into deep topics? Like, is there a balance?
I think there's totally balance. You have to read the room. And I think there is that this like asymmetry, I think that's the word for it, actually, like psychological asymmetry, which means we are so expert in our own experience. You know, we know ourselves like nobody else can. And we have such a hard time kind of thinking about what it's like to be another person. So I may go to a party and feel like super timid or reluctant and think, wow, everybody must be sort of shivering and afraid of small talk. But if you imagine the other end of the scenario, like I think a lot about, you know, you're at a party and you learn someone's name and a few seconds later you forget it, which happens to all of us. Often I'm like, oh, I'm just mortified. I can't believe I forgot their name. I'm going to have to ask again and they'll be so offended. But when I flip it around and that happens to me and somebody says, sorry, I didn't catch your name, I don't care at all. Right. So it's like this asymmetry. And so to think, you know, that other people don't want us to strike up a conversation is probably not true, like statistically, you know. And there's, again, I was looking around at the research on this. Conversation with strangers tends to make people happier, even though a lot of us are have sort of social anxiety about it, or some degree of it, like some reluctance to chat with a stranger. But when you look at it, it improves mood and it improves well-being in general. So, you know, it's a good thing, but we have a hard time, I think, seeing outside of our own hesitations. That makes sense.
It does make sense. And it's not that, well, me personally, it's not that I don't want to have a conversation with a stranger. I don't want to be stuck in a boring conversation with a stranger.
Yeah.
And in your, I think it was in your book, you talk about asking for stories instead of answers as a way to convert small talk into slightly more upgraded conversation. What, can you give some examples of what you mean by that?
Yeah, I'll answer that. But I want to pick up on something you just said, which is getting out of a conversation. And I was at a party recently where a woman was so brilliant at this. You know, my wife and I were talking to her. It was sort of a brief, like, nice enough conversation, but, you know, it wasn't going to go anywhere. And she just so generously said, well, it's been so nice talking to you, turned and left. Nobody was offended. Everybody was relieved. And again, I might think like, oh, if I did that, if I said nice to talk to you and left, they'd be offended. But I wasn't. I was glad she was like doing the heavy lifting of ending the conversation, which, you know, has to end at some point.
And that is the part of conversation that I struggle with the most, because I give off therapist vibes. So, and I'm not a therapist, and I give off mom vibes, and I'm not a mom. So you can imagine those two qualities together. I get cornered frequently. And so
people want to share everything.
Totally. So you're saying I can just say, thanks for this conversation and leave like that. I didn't know that was an option.
Yeah. Or, you know, I'm going to go over there. That's a little more blunt.
Oh my God.
But I would experiment with those, you know, the tone is everything. You know, it's been great talking to you. Thank you. I'm going to get a drink. I've got to go. I mean, be honest.
Always have to pee. So I'll just use that.
Perfect. Yeah. But I know what you mean. Yeah. You can, if you're a good listener or curious or give off those vibes, you can get cornered. Totally. But to your point, Meredith, on the other end, which is how do you turn sort of small, boring talk into something bigger? Those weren't your words. So correct me
I think those were my words actually. So you're good.
Yeah. I mean, I think first is like, do you want that? I mean, sometimes small talk is fine and we're not in the mood and it's just a social nicety. It's okay. But we've all had great conversations, like you said in the intro, with, you know, an Uber driver or someone in an elevator where it's like, oh, I'm so glad I asked or they asked and what a story they had. So, and like I said, this research says that generally it's good for us to interact with people as opposed to being on our phones. So what Chris Collin, my co-author of What to Talk About Tonight, suggest is going beyond these sort of facile, like kind of dead end answers, which are like, how are you doing? What's up? They are so vague and kind of binary that it leaves the conversation nowhere to go. So one I like is simply, and it's so simple, is just, what'd you do today? And it's easy to answer. And in that answer, you'll get like a dozen possibilities for follow-ups. Or, you know, if you want to tiptoe and be more bold, what did you have for breakfast? Or, you know, can you give me some advice? Like you can kind of read, you know, gauge the room and sort of step as unconventionally as you want. But something that lets people tell a story versus just say fine or I'm okay or sort of squirm in that like general conversation template, I think that opens up stuff. And it's the specifics, right? So if I ask you what you did today, you have to be specific for that. And depending on what you say, I can ask, just follow up on a dozen things, big or small.
I like that because it's not too catchy. You know, it's not like, what would you do if you were president or something weird, like icebreaker youth groupy?
People run the other way. But sometimes people like that, you know, or if it's a group you kind of know already. There's a guy, Rob Walker, who I think does great, great work. He has a newsletter called The Art of Noticing. And he collects this list of icebreakers from his readers. And it's just an ongoing Google Doc. And some are sort of zany and out there. And some are really simpler like that. But I'm sure listeners can look that up. Rob Walker, The Art of Noticing. And I love that noticing is, you know, part of his project as well.
Yeah.
I think it's the conversation, just actually noticing what's in front of you, what's being said, what's in the room.
It's harder than that. It's kind of like the beginning of curiosity. So I like that too. Yeah. And I think I'd like to introduce our first scenario if you are feeling ready for it. Okay. So you are on your way to a family reunion and you have vowed not to be the weirdo who just plays with kids and dogs at parties. P.S. I am that weirdo. You're surrounded by people whose names and professions you should know, but you don't. And it's a little late in the game to say, Aunt Barb, Tell me about yourself. So what are some strategies to have meaningful conversation with people who have changed your diapers?
Yes. Well, I would first kind of question the assumption that that playing with kids and dogs is a weirdo. I get where you're going, but that's kind of a necessary role. Sometimes those kids they're pretty good. They're pretty honest, easy in some ways to connect with. Pets even easier. So that's an important function that someone's playing, but I do get your point. And I would go back to those specifics. So I think I mentioned this one, but asking for advice is generally an invitation on something kind of universal, whether it's, I want to go on a vacation, but I don't have a huge budget, like anywhere you'd recommend. Commenting on something they're wearing, that's a cool necklace. What's the story? If you don't know the person, the history of their name can be an interesting way in. Again, it's sort of easy pickings for them. It's not too high pressure, but you'll get a story. And so specific questions and noticing what's in front of you. I find in this one, Meredith, I find like almost always works in a situation where you don't know folks. If you hear what their work is, you can almost always say, I bet fill in the blank work has changed a lot in recent years.
Ah.
And I swear 99% of the time that will just like, they'll just, oh my gosh, you wouldn't believe it, and they'll give you the whole history of the change of their industry, which is interesting. Usually.
Those are brilliant. I am so excited to go to the next family reunion. Words I think I never would have thought would ever come out of my mouth. So we've done good work here so far, Rob. We've done good work. So family members are an interesting topic, though, because, we talk a lot about small talk with, I think you call them drive-by conversations, like grocery store clerks and bank tellers and that sort of thing. Yeah. But I think when we say small talk, we can all agree we're mostly meaning empty conversations.
Yeah, right.
And with close family and friends that you see a lot, I think there is a trap of slipping into a version of small talk with the people that are closest in your life. So I'm just curious if there's any strategies to avoid that, to keep the conversation, interesting and moving with the people that you see every day.
Yeah. Well, I think there you have a chance to be a little bolder if you want. And again, I would start with the premise that we always want that. Again, sometimes small talk is fine. I think that's why the weather comes up as a evergreen conversation topic. It's easy. Everybody can say something about it. And just that sort of social dance, I think is fine a lot of the times. But as you're suggesting, we often want more and we can get stuck in these ruts. So there's where I'd venture to be a little bolder. Chris and I have a range of kind of scenarios from sort of mild to more provocative that you could prepare in advance. What era would you want to time travel to? What is your sort of parallel universe profession? That's kind of on the edge of, most people have an idea of if I weren't doing X, I would have been an astronaut. That can be an interesting one for someone a little bit. And you can prepare these, you can really, if you want, you could sort of study up for the next conversation, something you read recently, a book you're reading, you could make an offer as well as to go back to the improv lingo, putting something out there, doing a bit of thinking beforehand, mentioning a book you're reading, mentioning a problem you're having, that sort of taking the first step. And so it's a little bit of work, but I think in those situations, Meredith, it's worth the experiment to see if the depth pays off. It's an experiment. Not all this works. And part of it just takes a kind of resilience to say, all right, well, that didn't go anywhere. Next time I'll try something new,
Hey, Curiositors, just a quick pause to show gratitude to our sponsors and give you some special deals. If trash TV leaves you feeling drained and you want to support creators like yours truly, check out StreamMoco. You can search shows by your mood and even, you know, watch my show, The Curious Introvert. For every $3.99 subscription, they give away a dollar for good and support their creators, like your girl. Find my affiliate link in the episode description or the bio link in my Instagram account. StreamMoco, the streaming network that gives a damn. If you've got backyard barbecue plans for 2022, but mosquitoes are not invited, I recommend InSec. I've been using their pest control service for several years now. They have a certified mosquito identification specialist on staff, and pollinator care is always top of mind. If you live in the Florida Panhandle or the Gulf Coast of Alabama, give them a call, ensec.net. The UWF Historic Trust. We shoot the show at the Pensacola Museum of History. It not only houses exhibits of lesser-known Pensacola history, it's an event space too. So if you need a unique space in downtown Pensacola for a fundraiser, networking event, or a corporate party, take a look at historicpensacola.org. And if you want to tour one of the 12 museums, get your tickets in person so you can show the agent one of my emails and get $2 off an adult ticket. Get emails by texting REAL to 66866. Now back to the show.
And like the good news is like nobody, especially in a party, like nobody cares about you, which is like great news to me. You know? Instead of being thinking like everybody is watching me and, you know, worried about what I'm going to do. It's such a self-centered view that, you know, I've fallen into. It's like everybody's just thinking about themselves. So the good news is like, if you mess up, flub in a conversation, no big deal. They're thinking about themselves.
I mean, what I'm hearing you say is practice this at a bar with drunk people. That's what I'm getting out of that.
Great idea. Okay. Yeah, nobody will remember anyway.
Yeah. But for family members, it sounds like you could even gamify it a little bit, like put all those questions in a bowl and pick them out and, you know, it'd be a fun family game night.
Yeah. You know, we after the book published a set of cards that were meant exactly for that, what to talk about cards, which are prompts sort of ranked from easy to challenging. And they're totally meant for that. I've actually tried them. They work. It's just like a little prop, you know, it's kind of fun.
That's super fun. And speaking of preparing for, you know, the conversation, something you said in your talk at Google was before you go meet up with someone for like happy hour or whatever, get there early. And I think you use the term check in with yourself, which as someone who goes to yoga class from time to time, I know what that means. Yeah. But can you explain for like maybe the typical Midwestern guy who does not do yoga, what does that mean and why should he do it for meeting up with his buddies? Yeah.
You're talking about Tim. Hi, Tim.
Yeah, Tim.
Yeah. So why should Tim bother to check in with us? I think credit Chris for this idea, which is really not about the content of the conversation. And it, in my work as a communication consultant and trainer, we talk a lot about state. This is with the Stand and Deliver group, which is your kind of psychological, emotional condition before with our work at Stand and Deliver. It's before you get in front of your team or have a difficult conversation. But it's got nothing to do with the content. But we all know the way we feel can make or break a conversation. If it's, you know, if it's an important conversation, and even in a social setting, it's more of our state of being that's coming across above and beyond the content. So checking with yourself means where are you? Like where are you mentally, emotionally? It doesn't have to be a big deal, but instead of dragging whatever meeting you were just in into the next one or walking to the room without thinking, take a breath, you know, remind yourself why you're there and clear your mind. That's, you know, back to kind of the yoga prep, I think.
But it works. Yeah. I like that reset. That definitely works. I also liked a concept that you, I can't remember if you wrote about it or spoke about it, but it was a concept of disruption. Like doing or saying something unexpected. My personal favorite is a well-placed insult. I find that to be a delightful icebreaker. It can come across as flirty. So it has backfired from time to time, but I would love for you to explain why disruption works and, you know, while you're at it, how I can come across as less flirty.
All right. Those are two big questions. So, disruption, I think you've got to gauge the room, sort of judge folks' tolerance for something kind of out of left field. I think we're all in a positive way. Flirtation is sort of a positive, gender neutral kind of way of expressing an energy or curiosity. But I think I get what you're saying, which is that line of not wanting to go into a certain kind of flirtation. But there's a kind of danger there, right? There's a kind of like, I'm doing something unexpected. And that can sort of wake people up who are sort of sleepwalking through a conversation.
Exactly.
My wife did this, I think, brilliantly the other night. We were talking to a guy who was said he had worked for this really wealthy investor years ago. And I said, is he still the number one wealthiest guy and wherever? And the guy said no. And my wife said, is that because of the investment advice you gave him? It's sort of a light jab. But he took a beat and he laughed. And, you know, it's clearly a joke, but it just sort of broke the pattern. So that kind of, you know, insult in quotes, I think is fun. And as we say in the book, sort of picking a sort of left turn topic, if you feel like the audience can handle it, it is fun. Have you ever been ripped off is one that most people have a story about. That's not too radical, you know, but I might be collecting stories about people getting ripped off. I'm sure many people listening can think of a time when they got ripped off, which is already a story. And again, we'll provide you like a ton of follow-up questions. So a slight left turn or a hard left turn, depending on like how you think the room will handle it. The room, I mean, the other person. And then to your point, like, you know, how do you navigate the flirtation line? Beats me.
Well, yeah, you can't really control how people interpret things. But a theme I'm seeing throughout is asking for the story and not just a yes or no answer. So I feel like that is definitely a clear takeaway. I would love to do scenario number two with you, if you're ready. So this scenario is you're invited to a party where you only know the host. In the spirit of meeting new people, you attend. You quickly discover everyone's favorite topic is what you consider the wrong side of a political viewpoint. Mm-hmm. What's the best way to have meaningful conversation without starting a riot?
Great question. Yeah, this is a tricky one. I think we've all been there. These days, it's trickier than ever. I think the advice to avoid politics and religion is generally good.
Yeah.
With this scenario, I would really start with the outcome. And I'm, again, bringing this from my work as a communication consultant with Stand and Deliver, where we're always asking, what's the outcome of this talk or conversation? So this is going to seem like a long way around, but I remember my daughter was probably 4 years old. I was picking her up from a camp, and we were getting to our car, and I hear this honking and yelling. I'm holding her hand. This guy steps out of this big SUV. It's parked right behind us. And starts yelling that I had parked too close to his car. He couldn't get out. I looked, there was, you know, it was tight, but there was plenty of space. I wanted to tell him, like, do you want me to pull your car out for you? I didn't say that. but he kept yelling and screaming and coming at me. He comes up to me and bumps my chest. And I had two reactions, like blood just filled my face.
Yeah.
And so the first reaction was like a physical retaliation. The second was, I'm going to prove that I'm right, because I was totally right. There was a little bit of space, but there was plenty of space for him to pull his car out. Right. So like my instinct was to prove him right, which was totally ridiculous, like totally not a desirable outcome, but that's where my mind went in the moment. In that case, of course, my outcome was like, get out of here, keep my daughter safe. I got her in the car. We left and never saw the guy. That was a good outcome. So I bring that back to this scenario, because I would start with the outcome, which might be on that visceral level, like the emotional level. Well, these people are wrong. I'm going to prove that I'm right. which we can all see from a distance, like, how's that going to go? You know, so you're going to convert a whole party of people over to your opinion? Probably not. So what else is an outcome? Like, one, maybe, you know, maybe you decide you want to learn, like, how could somebody that takes this like wildly different opinion than I have get there? Like, so back to curiosity, like, could I approach this like a reporter? And my outcome is simply to learn. I had an Uber or Lyft ride where the driver, you know, it was like a 2-hour ride in traffic to the airport. And he brought up in the middle of it, an opinion that I found totally, opposite of mine. So my first impulse was like to disabuse him and, you know, educate him and prove that I was right. Of course that wasn't going to happen. So I, you know, and I'm not always like, able to do this, but I thought, let me just see if I can understand how he arrived here. So that turned out to be a much better outcome for me, like a much better experience, I think, for both of us. So in this party, I would first say, what's my outcome really? And if it's like, you know, convert every person here to my correct point of view, probably not great. So maybe it's like, I could come at this like an anthropologist or a reporter and learn. It's probably going to be a better experience for everyone.
That is a much kinder, like, inner dialogue than what I have historically had. Oh, yeah.
I'm not saying I do that all the time.
Because I'm thinking about, like, sometimes when I am witnessing or speaking with people that I'm like, oh my God, who ties your shoes? Like, I pretend that they are developmentally challenged, and it helps me be nice to them. But how mean is that compared to what you just said? I'm going to have to like change over and do.
I don't know. I mean, if nobody knows what your story is, like,
well, now everyone knows because we're on a podcast.
Now everyone knows. Yeah. Be careful next time you talk to Meredith. Oh, wow. She's so nice. And she speaks so slowly and such simple.
She patted my head. Oh, God.
That's right. The head patting, it's usually.
That'll be a giveaway. If I pat your head.
Yeah. It's, time to go. I will say, like, you know, I will say this is a physician heal thyself kind of moment. Like that's theoretically what I would love to do. I don't always get there. Okay. And sometimes like with the car, you know, with that like chest bump guy, like the answer is to leave, like, you know, and it's harder to do if it's a friend, but like, I know nothing's going to, you know, I'm not going to be at my best self here. So I'm going to find a way to gracefully leave. Fair enough. You know, I think a lot of us get trapped in that sort of like, it's a very emotional response. Like, I'm going to take this opportunity to prove I'm right. I've never seen that work. I don't know.
I agree. Do you feel like there's specific considerations for introverts versus extroverts when having or trying to have meaningful conversations?
Well, first of all, thank goodness for the extroverts. I mean, they're doing a lot of the heavy lifting. I met a kid, you know, it's funny when you see a really extroverted kid. The other day I was talking to like a 9-year-old and she's like, so, you know, how are you doing? Tell me what, you know, oh my gosh. What are your plans for the week? I was like, oh my gosh, she's more, you know, more present and like leaderly than I am. But like, that's, you know, it's important work to like put out the first move and, you know, make offers. So, as an introvert, what's been super helpful to me is this kind of inner game back when you talked about, kind of checking in with yourself. So if I'm going to a party, it's like, what's my story here? Is it that everybody is, you know, going to be clinging to my every word? That's such a self-centered point of view. I remember a class in college, like a seminar. It was like 15 people in there and you would all sit around this big table and speak. And I remember, I can still feel this in my body, like having something to say and feeling my heart pounding and feeling sweat under my arms and like working up the courage. Like after she speaks, I'm going to say my idea, and feeling like everybody was like, you know, close up camera, like waiting for me, which is such a self-absorbed, such a self-absorbed point of view. Like they didn't care. They were thinking about the thing they were going to say. So I'm kind of repeating this point, but sort of getting over yourself, like, yes, you may feel sort of heightened and sensitive, and that's all real, but it's okay. Like people aren't noticing it and they're probably feeling the same. So for introverts, I would start with that sort of baseline. Examine your story, your state, and see if there's a better, you know, more useful way to go into this for you and the people in this situation. Like, how can I help people out? I mean, I think that's a good one for introverts. It is for me. Instead of like, what am I going to say that's going to be fascinating? Like, how can I make it easier for the people at this party? They don't know anybody here either, so maybe I can be of service. Like, by coming prepared or making offers or paying attention, that sort of turns the tables for me. Then it's not about me being witty or charming or smart. It's like, I'm going to try to make this easier for them.
Yeah, I love that. As an introvert, I could just, when you said you felt the nervousness in your body, as an introvert, when you said the point about thinking about others, like I felt that in my body. That felt like, oh, cool. Yeah.
Right.
That is where I feel the most comfortable, because I have been in some crazy, like uncomfortable situations that I put myself in. and when I think about others, like try to make people, other people comfortable, that is what makes me the best version of what I can be in that moment. So
yeah, totally.
I love that example. Okay. Let's do scenario number three, our last scenario before we close. So in this scenario, you are climbing the corporate ladder in a family, in a family-run business, okay, where it's all about who you know. One day, your boss's boss steps into the elevator with you. How do you make yourself memorable?
Oh, this is a tough one, Meredith. Okay, this is like multiple layers. We're in the elevator. It's a short ride. It's my boss's boss, family-run business, and I'm climbing the corporate ladder. So I'm making assumptions that this character is sort of an ambitious ladder climber. But I'll sort of check that and say, yeah, like, you know, this is a good, this fictional me is a, like an honest person who wants to make an impression. There is a great scene from the show Mad Men. And if anybody knows that show, it doesn't matter if you know, but there's a character, Pete Campbell, who he's a pretty kind of cheesy salesman. But there's a great scene where he's at a dinner. This is not too dissimilar. I think it's Don Draper's father-in-law, who's a French academic. And Pete Campbell sits down at the dinner and starts to describe his job. He's an account manager at an ad agency. And the French guy's like, but I didn't understand. What do you do? And Pete Campbell, and you can find this on YouTube, Google like Pete Campbell explaining what he does. Pete Campbell says, well, Emil, I understand you're an academic. He says, yeah. He says, and what I hear is your work is quite pioneering, something like that. And the French guy says, yeah. He said, I bet the world would be a lot better off if more people knew about what you do. And the guy says, well, of course. And Pete says, that, Emil, is what I do. So I bring that in because that, again, this is the theme, right? Instead of me using that 30 seconds to like recite my resume, that I actually get curious, ask or learn something about him or her. I forget who this relative was. And then frame whatever I have to say in terms of their story.
That is brilliant. I love that. It reminds me of, I think something else I read in a different book that says, if you are on an airplane with someone and you facilitate conversation in a way that they talk about themselves the whole time, both of you will leave that airplane, but the other person will say to themselves, oh, wow, she's the most interesting person I've ever spoken to. Because it's all about them.
Yeah. And you said something at the very beginning, I think, which is about being heard in a conversation, which I think is so overlooked. And simply acknowledging what you're hearing can make a conversation feel so profound. I mean, it sounds so simple, but I love the phrase, it sounds like. So I'm listening to you. It's like, wow, it sounds like you're in between jobs and you really want to find whatever. And you're not parroting what you hear, but you're acknowledging. You're making them feel heard. And that's magic, I think.
It is magic. And this conversation was magic. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. So much. I so enjoyed it. Thank you for inviting me.
Can you give a shout out of where people can buy your book, cyber stalk you on the internet, all the things?
Yeah, I heard of this thing called Google. I think you, Yeah, anyway, Google it, you'll find it. Our books are on Amazon. I've written several with the Casper Hauser Comedy Group, Books of Comedy. I work with the Stand and Deliver Group. We do leadership training and consulting for teams and leaders all over the place. So I'm somewhat easy to find.
Excellent. Well, thank you again. This was amazing.
Thanks, Meredith.
Thanks for listening. If at the end of episodes like this one, you wish you could have taken notes, don't worry. I've done it for you. Every Saturday, I send an email with cliff notes and clickable links for that week's episode. Then on Monday, I send episode announcements with the scoop on how I found that week's guests. If you're in the U.S., just text REAL to 66866. Outside the U.S., go to meredithforreal.com. And if you liked this episode, you'll also like the one I did where I shared tips and insights on being an outgoing introvert, episode 127. Stay tuned next week when I talk with a man who ate his own foot. Talk to you then.